Australia. Place Branding. Australia.
Welcome to Place Branding Australia, the podcast. This is our very first episode, and to give you some background as to why we're undertaking this one, we're here to provide Australians that are interested in and work in place with some food for thought and an introduction to some of the leading place branding practitioners in the country. These first few episodes as well will provide our conference attendees with an insight into some of our speakers' thinking and philosophy when it comes to place branding, and should really whet the appetite in the lead up to the conference March 9 to 11 in Hobart. The voice that you're hearing now is that of Stu Spears. I'm the curator and MC of Place Branding Australia, the conference, and I'm also the owner and director of a consultancy that specialises in place-based event planning and strategy. Without really knowing it at the time, I was drawn into the world of place branding as a part of the team that planned and delivered the first few iterations of Vivid Sydney. And as an event, it highlights and epitomises so much of what Sydney siders pride themselves on and its deep connection to place. That's really where I got my start in the world of place branding. So with those brief introductions out of the way, it's time to introduce our very first interviewee, CEO of Brand Tasmania, Todd Babiak. For those of you that haven't come across Todd before, he's been immersed in the world of place branding for well over 10 years now. And as CEO of Brand Tasmania, is at the helm of what has recently been recognised as Place Brand of the Year at the recent City Nation Place Annual Awards held in London earlier this month. Todd, welcome to Place Branding Australia, the podcast.
Thanks, Stu. What an honour to be the first interviewee.
It felt like a bit of a no-brainer to us, particularly after that last award. First of all, congratulations on the award. What a wonderful achievement for you.
Yeah, I'm just sad I wasn't able to go. I go to that conference generally every year, and you always watch someone else win that prize. And I always dreamed of winning, and here I am, winning from glorious Tasmania. But no, it was wonderful, really good for the team and for everyone we've been working with over the last couple of years.
Yeah, I understand the High Commissioner was on hand to actually accept the award on your behalf.
Yeah, it was fabulous. In fact, everyone on stage who won all the various awards, it was all a bunch of powerful looking women. So it was actually a great photo.
Oh, wow. Fantastic. Awesome. Well, without further ado, we'll get into our discussion, and it'll be pretty freewheeling today, but I suppose I'll dive in with a little scenario for you to contemplate. And it's sort of framed with the thought that I myself have found explaining place branding as a practice quite challenging at times in a succinct way. So let me put this scenario to you. The two of us are at a backyard barbecue, and we've both got a beverage in hand. And I introduce you to my friend Ange by saying, Ange, meet Todd. He's the CEO of a place branding organisation. Ange's question then is, right, what's place branding, Todd? What do you say?
Well, I suppose I would say we're unifying all of our efforts economically, socially, and culturally so that people can choose Tasmania. And it might be so they can choose Sydney, so they can choose Brisbane. But that's often what I say. The problem inherent in place branding and why it exists to me is just randomness. Most places using cliches and nonsense to try to sell themselves in a really competitive world for talent, for investment, for tourism, buying our products, for studying. How can you develop a cultural expression that brings all of that together, that unifies all of those efforts and allows you to make fantastic decisions as business people, as government leaders, as citizens, to tap into pride, why you live where you live? And I think when you look around the world, the places that you're drawn to, you see, whether it's apparent or not, you see a great strategy. You see something that unifies their efforts, and culture usually is the glue.
Interesting. So you've used those words. Perhaps if I put those words together for you, the definition that I'm hearing there is a unifying cultural expression, which is something I've heard you use before. In your experience as a place brander, how long did it actually take you personally to land on that as your definition of place branding?
I think a couple of years. I was a little like you, accidentally involved in this. I had worked at a company called Story Engine, and we used narrative for for our clients in every possible way, usually after the clients had hired a traditional management consultancy, given them an 80-page strategic plan that they never looked at, or they'd hired an advertising agency to tell them who they were, and all they end up with some really nice design and a cliche. They'd come to us and say, we still don't know what to say. We still don't know what makes our bank, our university, our bread company special. And so we would work through this process with them. And then a city that I was living in at the time in Canada, Edmonton, which is kind of an underappreciated place in Canada, they were going to go through a rebrand. And of course, they're going to get the agencies from New York or London to come in and tell them who they were. And we just pitched the city on a different approach. The approach we'd taken with Storians and with products and companies. And they were brave enough to say yes. In fact, they said maybe. And so we just started working for free. And then we pitched to the city afterwards. So it was by stealth, certainly, and we took a risk ourselves on the process we used. So I suppose that's where the whole notion came from. And what we realized is every city is doing the same thing. Every state is doing the same thing. Every country is doing the same thing. The one thing you can't take away from Edmonton, or in this case, Tasmania, and everywhere else I've worked is culture. And there's a reason why people choose to be where they are. And if you can tap into that and to tap into what binds them, what unifies those feelings and that effort and that pattern of success, you can really distill something and then turn it into strategy.
Yeah, awesome. And so to go back to that example of Edmonton, are there any specific moments or practical applications from what you delivered there that spring to mind that you were proudest of with your work there?
Well, our process has always been the same. And when you spend time, what we originally did, and we failed at this, was, well, let's do a bunch of workshops. We'll bring a bunch of people in a room together and we'll work through it. And we'll have a facilitator go through and there will be sticky notes and words will be used. And in the end, that's what I mean about every place saying the same thing. If you asked Edmontonians at the time what made them special, they would say, well, we're innovative and we're sustainable and we're resilient and we're diverse. And it was really the words that everyone uses for everything. And we found it's the same thing in universities and colleges. It's the same thing in banks. It's the same thing with all of our clients. And so what we started to do was remove people and do one-on-one interviews, which took a lot longer and it cost a lot of money. And spent a lot of time doing it. But the great thing is when you get someone alone after the first five awkward minutes, you can ask them, well, what is it about Edmonton? Why have you chosen this place? You could live anywhere. You're a smart person. And then they might tell a little story and get beyond the abstractions. And when they would tell stories, they might talk about the founding of the Fringe Festival in North America in Edmonton, or they might talk about all these companies that had started its sole proprietorships and it built into these global giants really in an almost haphazard fashion through a spirit of entrepreneurship in an agricultural place with a lot of indigenous history and also with cooperation. And there's that kind of prairie barn building thing that happened in that city over time. And you could see those are the elements of success in every way. And if you ignored that meeting place of entrepreneurship and cooperation, that agricultural and indigenous quality of the place, you usually failed. And so what we did is we took all of these examples of Edmonton success, packaged them together and told that story back to Edmontonians. And then sort of said, how do we build with this, get beyond marketing, but into community, economic, and cultural development. And so we launched an organization called Make Something Edmonton. And the biggest example from that, where people really started to understand it and the community took it, was the city of Edmonton at the time made food trucks illegal. So you could have a food truck, but you couldn't actually put it anywhere unless you had a license for that spot, because the restaurant lobby was so strong. And people worried about the health effects of having these food trucks. This is about 10 years ago, I suppose. And so people looked at this work we were doing with Made Something Edmonton and complained to the city and said, you know what, you're off brand. You say this is who we are, but you're not letting us do it. So let us move these food trucks. And so they did a pilot and said, okay, for a year, you can have this festival and you can move these food trucks around. And Edmonton in a year and a half went from 6 food trucks to 106 food trucks. And wow. So all these people coming out of this agricultural college and culinary college were launching these businesses. A local bank got involved and for $100,000 said, okay, here's the turnkey solution so you can launch these things. These festivals started, and 2 years later, a French film crew arrived in Edmonton looking to do a series of documentaries about food culture. And they said Edmonton had the best food truck culture in North America. And that happened in 2 years. So if you can chat. And of course, they graduated then into brick and mortar restaurants. It was just a great example of how you can take a story, take a brand, take a culture, and turn it into economic and community development.
And in that case there, it sounds like you've essentially, the real trigger moment there was holding a mirror up to the local council to say, look, you talk the talk, but you're actually not walking the walk, and here is where you need to change things.
Yeah, that's it. And happily, it wasn't us. It wasn't these consultants doing it. It was the community members themselves doing it, who understood the story. That's what made it work. If we'd gone in there and knocked on the door and said, hey, let us do this thing as consultants, they would have been skeptical of us, and they would have worried about where'd you get the data? This is a big risk we're taking. We're going to put people offside. We'll be punished for it. But instead, it was a groundswell from the community itself, and, you know, Make Something Edmonton in the end had thousands of projects that people launched, and they worked in an entrepreneurial and cooperative way in order to make it go. And I suppose it allowed Edmontonians to see a brand is not what you say, it's what you do.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like, from what I understand of the process that you've undertaken at Brand Tasmania, there's a lot of the roots of what you've done there have come from that work in Edmonton. So perhaps if we move on to Brand Tasmania now as a project and an organisation itself, run us briefly by the how it actually came about as an organisation, and the size of your team, the budgets that you're that are available to you. Take us through the story of Brand Tasmania.
There was an organization called Brand Tasmania for 20 years, and it was a group of exporters. It was a council who wanted to just get more value for Tasmanian things that they were sending, mostly food and beverage. And they hired me as a consultant I was here in 2017, and then I was here again in 2018 a couple of times. But the idea was to take that process that I'd started in Edmonton and I traveled the world with happily. And I was just another consultant, and they were a client. And we did the same process here. We used ABS statistics to get a broad cross-section of Tasmanians, did those one-on-one interviews right across the state, and tried to tap in again to what makes this place so different and so special. What are you most proud of and least proud of? And what would break your heart if you had to leave? And for example. And the stories we heard here were really consistent as well. And there was even a voice and a way to tell these Tasmanian stories. And once we started to hear this again and again, we realized we were really onto something potentially, and that there was a way to form an organization around it. And what we've done here at Brand Tasmania is we've thought of ourselves as a client service organization, because we have this impossible mission to bind trade, tourism, workforce attraction, investment attraction, student attraction, and then of course community action around this unifying story or expression, and then of course strategy. And that is something a small team can't do without helping everyone else do it. So we rush around and do these workshops, and we work with our partners in and out of government in order to help them understand the story that we heard from Tasmanians, the story that we're increasingly hearing from what the world wants from Tasmania, so we can really tap into that understanding we can't do everything.
And as people might be able to hear from you today, you're speaking with an accent that's clearly not Tasmanian. What was it about this project and Tasmania as a place that actually brought you out from Canada itself? It's a pretty big move within itself.
Well, for me, part of it was the right time. Like I said, I was traveling a lot. So I grew up in Edmonton, but I moved around a lot, lived in France and lived in other parts of Canada, that sort of thing. But what I was noticing is I was away from my family for about 5 months of the year, going to different parts of North America, going to Europe, Africa at times, and then Australia. And as the company was becoming more and more international, I was becoming more and more international. And I'd wake up and I wouldn't even know where I was half the time. That first sort of awkward moment when you wake up. And I was seeing less and less of my children as they were moving into their teen years. And when, happily, Brand Tasmania took my advice and started setting up this organization, there was an opportunity for someone to be the inaugural CEO. And I know it sounds really strange to have a forwarder come in and be the CEO of Brand Tasmania, but I applied for the job and I knew the story intimately and I found it deeply attractive. I liked the story. I found it one of the most consistent and powerful I'd heard anywhere in any place I'd worked. And I liked the people, I liked the place. And selfishly, I also wanted to test myself. When you're a consultant, and I know, Stu, you understand this, when you're a consultant, sometimes it hurts when you see your client not implementing things the way you might have liked them to. And that's a bit of a cop-out. You know, we can launch and see when something doesn't work. We can say, oh, it's their fault, not mine. The strategy I put together for my client was beautiful. Why did they make it work? And I didn't really know the constraints that people are under and how hard this work is. So the notion of taking a risk and trying to implement a story and implement a strategy that I've been a part of was really attractive. And so here I am. My family was up for the adventure and they're having a grand time here in Tasmania with me.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, you're touching on there probably one of the foundational things of a place branding project is just to understand that there's not a simple solutions out there for it. You're uniting many, many different people and businesses and projects and departments, and that's all made up of humans, and all of us humans are very different. So it's, as you say, the impossible task to actually do this or create this unifying cultural expression.
And there are so many incentives working against us, where a lot of people, they want to protect their budgets or what they've been doing or what they're comfortable doing the last few years, even if you sit down with them and say, in our research, what we've learned is what we're doing, A, won't work, and B, can't work. What if we were able to do it differently? For some people, that's a really exciting conversation, and they're keen to work and start to build something magnificent together. For other people, it's a threat, and they immediately dislike you. And so you do have to, and that's why it's a bit of an advantage coming from client service for so long and consulting for so long. You have to be a partner, bring people along, help them succeed. And I think that is a nice way to approach this rather than the more top-down corporate side of branding, which is, all right, there's a new logo, there's a new color scheme, there's a new tagline. You must use it and here are the rules you must follow. And if you don't do it, you're going to be in trouble. What we've tried to do is be really gentle about this, understanding it's a long game to implement an evolution of a brand or a story or an expression. And ultimately, everyone out there, they are the brand every day, the decisions they are making, the words they're saying, the way that they're inviting people to be a part of it. If they see the power in it and they see that it's who they are, it's part of their culture, then they do the work for you over time.
So as a practice, place branding, what is it as a profession and a practice that really excites you?
There's this thing I think we all do wherever we live, wherever we go, where we walk past something or we experience something, whether it's cultural or physical, and we don't notice it. We don't notice what makes it so special. And one of the things I love about this work is suddenly you can allow people to take a second look at who they are, where they live, where their families are from, the decisions they've made, and to see the magic in it. There's something beautiful about the place we've chosen to live. And then to turn that into success and pride and confidence, and even more importantly, in some ways, a new way to solve problems that have been devilishing us for years or generations. That's beautiful work. And I think right now, here in Tasmania, for example, one of the things that I noticed when I first came here, the Tasmanian brand is often about the small and the special and the growing. It's what Tasmanians see all around themselves when they're delighted by this place. And it's what people want from Tasmania as well, is wonderful, special things, opportunities. But then there's also this huge aspect of Tasmania that, for me, coming from a place that was in the middle of energy wars for so long, having 100% self-sufficiency in renewable electricity, what you could do with that, and being net zero for five of the last 6 years, what you could do with that. There's this huge potential here. Mm. And that was something that I think Tasmanians thought was just the hydro. We grew up with this. We built this thing over a century of hard work and sacrifice and invention, but it's just here. For me to come in and say, oh my gosh, you know, I don't know if you know how powerful this thing you have is. And over the next 5 or 10 years, Tasmania could do some really special things, kind of workshopping how a place can transition from one sort of economy to another using this base load of renewable electricity. That's something that I just think is really, really special. And it's an example of what you can do just by, you know, having people notice what is right in front of them.
Mm. Yeah, I suppose when you there wouldn't be too many enemies you'd be making if you've got telling someone why they're so special, and then they actually go, you know what, maybe we are a little bit more special than we thought we were. That's probably a pretty good message. I would have thought people would have responded pretty well to that.
Yes, we're mostly in the good news business. So that is a nice part where you can work in government or in an NGO or even in business, and it can be pretty grim what you're dealing with every day. And we're not hiding any of the problems we have here in Tasmania, but we are in the problem solving business, and how can we take our strengths and apply them to our weaknesses in order to build something special?
Mm. Yeah. So in looking back over your career, and correct me if I'm wrong, but we're talking probably, and when I say place career, I mean place branding, time and place branding career. We're sort of talking 10 plus years, is that right?
Yeah, I think my first place branding assignment started in 2011.
We're right on the anniversary then. So looking back over that career to date, can you take us through any sort of penny drop moments where you really started to get it or understand it in a way that you hadn't before as a practice?
One of the things that we're not finished yet, but it's an example of the sort of thing that I love, that just lights me up, and you can see the way people respond to it when you're working with them. Yeah. When we did our interviews with Tasmanians, we wanted to focus on the pattern of success, the story in a positive way, but also we wanted to understand what wasn't working, what was the least Tasmanian thing as people were responding to us. And they would often talk about literacy or youth aspiration, high school completion rates. You know, there's a lack of aspiration, pride, and confidence in this place, and how honest Tasmanians were about feel like almost second-class Australians being left off the map, being made fun of. And you can spend a lot of time on that. And they can joke, Tasmanians would joke and show me the scar from their second head and all these things I had to learn about. But in the second half of this conversation, they would admit, you know, growing up without pride, moving to the mainland for a while and not even wanting to say where you're from because they didn't want to deal with the jokes, that's something that's really difficult to figure out. How do we address this in our work? And I guess the penny drop example here, and I've dealt with it everywhere I've worked, is just that honesty of being honest about the problem. And I think narrative needs a problem. It's the engine of the story, and I think the emotional energy behind what we can do together. Transformation is at the core of this work, because no place is finished, and we can always do better. We can look and say, okay, that's who we are at our best, but we're not always there. We can strive for that. And so we've really worked on some projects to go after that pride and confidence, even specifically around literacy and high school completion here, that traditionally would not be included in what you call place branding or economic development. But hopefully, you know, this will outlive my work and the team's work, where we can look back on what we did and say, you know, we started something that had a real generational improvement on the lives of Tasmanians. So yeah, I think the sense of honesty and authenticity is really important, especially with most of us, when we're dealing with a client, especially, they want their story or their brand to be, we've always been awesome, and we are incrementally more awesome because of this work. And there's just nothing in that. You know, we were innovative yesterday, and tomorrow we're gonna be even more innovative. It's boring. And I think we're getting smacked in the face constantly by that sort of advertising, those sorts of messages. And even internally, having to, with our organizations we work for, rallying around that is impossible. How can you feel like I need something meaningful today when that's the kind of language you're using? So Yeah, being honest and culturally specific, I think those are two of the penny drop moments that I've seen.
Yeah, it's interesting. If place brand success is getting someone to move to a place, that's an emotional and a massive decision for someone. So to pretend that you can maybe achieve that through slogans and we're always positive, there's a certain lack of humanity that's required to move someone to the point of deciding to move a business or a house or a home or their family to a place. It strikes me that honesty that you're talking about will make the message far more human and then far more compelling when it comes down to making what are ultimately very, very big decisions about why you'd move to a place. It's certainly not going to be, we're great, come and join us, is the message that compels you to do something so big.
Yeah, well, certainly not Tasmania. I mean, Tasmania is great, and you could say we are great. But Tasmania is not for everyone. And there are a lot of people for whom Tasmania just probably isn't the place. But for some people, it's exactly what they're looking for. There's something in me that calls to me from this place. I mean, when we're looking at our come live here workforce attraction audience that you're talking about, we've tried to sum them up as ambitious introverts who love nature. And they tend to be really happy here, whether you grew up here and stayed or you decided to come. It's usually not for money. It's usually for something more meaningful, and that sense of ambition that you need to live in and succeed in Sydney, Melbourne, New York, London, it's just different here. The rewards are different. Your career pathway will be different, but there are career pathways here, and they're magnificent. They're just different. And holding on to who Tasmania is for is really important. And I think if you open yourself up too much and you start telling people it's going to be that kind of place, that language you're using is so great here, it's perfect here, what you do often disappoint people. And in our interviews, we found people who had been here in Tasmania for a couple of years, and they felt, you know, they came on vacation, they felt like, you know, I'm going to sell my really expensive house in Sydney or Melbourne, I'll move to Tasmania, I'll buy something cheaper, and I'm brilliant, I'm going to succeed here, it's going to be easy, I'm going to make friends, I'm going to kick butt. And 2 years later, they just feel like it's not working out. They're going to go back to the mainland. But they're kind of blaming Tasmania for it. But in the end, what happened is they were promised something that isn't true of Tasmania. They didn't realize that it is a bit harder here. And we are a bit more isolated. And the rewards are not necessarily what you'd imagine from after living in a big city for a long time. And that adjustment is not for everyone. So what we're trying to do, what we're looking at, inviting people to do that massive thing, as you say, and move your family here, just so they understand this is what it's like. It is wonderful, but it's not easy the way a big city is easy and convenient the way a big city is convenient. The ease and convenience of Tasmania is different. And I think we're playing around, for example, with language we use for what everyone needs at the moment. Health workers, for example. Some health workers, they really belong here. But others, you know, if you really want to specialize, you need to be in a big city hospital. You need to do that one specific thing. It just will not be maybe the career for you here.
Yeah. Todd, you've mentioned there's a recurring theme through what we've discussed so far, and it's this idea of being a place branding when it's at its best is a ground-up process. We're not talking about logos and branding that necessarily is overriding everything and then we educate everyone underneath it. It's actually your team and the process that Brand Tasmania has undertaken has been very much one-on-one interviews, reflecting with the people that you've interviewed some months down the track when to see that you've actually understood them properly, and then empowering them and enlightening them to their own wonder, I suppose, and what they really have at their fingertips. Given that that's a very human resource intensive process, and your team's a very small one, but you would have been working very hard over the last 2 or 3 years to find all those people, to speak to them, to reflect with them. It does require resource and does require quite a lot of budget. Would you say with some of our listeners out there that might have quite limited budgets within councils and the like, is there a certain point at which in place branding isn't actually worth doing, because if you can't do it to the point where you're really engaging one-on-one and having to spend the time and resource that comes with doing that, then it's not actually worth doing. Is it possible to do place branding on a really shoestring budget?
Well, I think we have a pretty shoestring budget. There are six of us, but at the moment, five of us, because one of us is very ambitious and moved on to more of a whole of government role to implement sort of thinking. But what I would say is when I first came in, and just being frank with listeners, with people listening to the podcast, I had a group of people I was working with really passionate about this work, but it was difficult to get funding for it. And I think the word, and everyone up there will understand this, I think the word brand often comes with some cynicism, some eye rolling. It's a nice to have, and it does sound like a logo. A lot of people would use the word as a synonym for logo or tagline or color scheme, whatever's in the brand guidelines. And having that to educate our government partners around, well, this is actually what we mean by brand, this unified cultural expression and strategy. It'll make you better. It'll bring more value to everything Tasmanian. It'll excite your staff and it'll give them another reason to come into work. And more importantly, we have to get out there and not only educate, but invite a lot of Tasmanians to be a part of this, to tell the story back to them. So you're right, it was a real roadshow and remains so. We have been doing workshops, one-on-one workshops, but we usually have between 25 and sometimes 700 people in the room, having them work on their Tasmanian story. We tell them the story back, and then we try to give them something, how to use narrative in their own brand building, their own strategy, and then ask them, how can we work together on some projects, whether it's with local councils or with businesses, with the University of Tasmania, Leinston. How do we tell this story in a really powerful way? How do we unify our efforts and make sure that this place, which has a little like Edmonton in some ways, connection between people is a massive strength. How can we tap into that and make sure that we're doing that at 100% or at least 8%? So you're right, just getting out there. And I wouldn't say that you should ever come to the conclusion we shouldn't bother. I do think, accept that what you ultimately want from this is impossible. You can't, in a messy democracy, give like the efforts of 500,000 or a million or 5 million or even 300 people. But what you can do is find those early adopters and people who really believe in this and are willing to work with, and sometimes for you, to elevate and uplift the culture of the place and to turn it into strategy. There are going to be, no matter what, a certain percentage of people who are so proud, who are so excited and so happy to be a part of this place that they'll join you. There are people, we have people who've come to our workshops five or six times. It's the same workshop every time, but they keep coming because they want to tap into that feeling and become partners with one another. And that's been the great thing is when we're really scaling our work, we don't even need to be there. And it's almost as though one of my secret ambitions at Brand Tasmania is to make Brand Tasmania no longer necessary, because it's everyone understands it across government and the private sector so deeply and intuitively. They're doing it every day. They're asking themselves, is this Tasmanian or not? And they're making those Tasmanian decisions. I mean, that's probably not going to happen anytime soon, but it is a nice thought that you can almost put yourself out of business when you succeed.
Yeah, it's a noble ambition. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
You did mention there that it's sometimes the word brand actually can lead to the powers that be maybe rolling their eyes and having seen brands come through their desks over the years. How is it that you actually would recommend going to those powers that be, again, for our listeners here, if they need to convince the powers that be that a place branding project is worth investing in, what are the arguments that you'd take to the table there?
Well, I suppose you have to understand your audience. For some people, the reason for doing this work is just for jobs and growth, and that's okay. So you have to make sure, no matter what, because jobs and growth create so much opportunity culturally and socially and uplift so many people, that your brand, the work you're doing, will lead to jobs and growth, future industries, a lot more people coming to be a part of your place, buying your things, having a relationship with you, and when they see an opportunity to visit, to engage with it, to send their children to be educated in this place, they're positive, they have a positive association with it. So I think that is really important when you're talking to the powers that be. The powers that be are already doing this work, no matter what. They're spending money on advertising. They're looking at marketing. They need talented people. They need investment. Everyone wants students. We want people to buy our stuff. And we want to make sure that the people we're representing out there feel supported by this sort of central team leading them. And I think that's what place branding, when it's done properly, can really offer. If we empathize with the person we're speaking to and we enter their hearts and think about what keeps them from sleeping at night and use what we're doing to help solve some of those problems, then I think we're probably moving in the right direction. If we think of the work we're doing as, you better follow the brand guidelines, you're probably putting a best before date on your work, because no matter what, and we know this here, that the look and feel will change over time. What doesn't change is that cultural element and that tapping into that pride of identity and what it means to be of this place. If we can always remember to turn that into, whether it's jobs and growth or better educational outcomes or social outcomes or cooler art festivals or whatever it might be, can we use that, the lens we're creating, the decision-making lens, the brand lens, and apply it to these problems, to these opportunities, then I think elegant strategy is something that everyone understands. And we want to make this as simple and as powerful as it can be for, I suppose, our clients and partners, no matter who we're working with.
And to get to that level of simplicity, it'll take time. And knowing that our governments and councils have their fixed terms in mind, is there a way to convince and frame this argument around place branding and the longevity and the long time frames that it actually requires? Is there a good way to argue that with those powers that be, that this isn't necessarily something that'll land on your desk in 6 months' time, but it's something that's an ongoing and long-term project?
It is, of course, helpful to have a visionary leader who doesn't see her or his career in months, but understands the reason they've chosen to do this public service, in this case potentially, is because they want to leave something behind, and they want 20 years down the road people look back and say, I'm so glad that happened, I'm so glad we had a great leader at that time. So you can, of course, tap into those instincts. And here at Tasmania, we're really lucky to have trans leaders who are feeling that way about Tasmania right now. And I think COVID helped clarify people's thinking about a little bit of the long game, who are we really doing this for? So that's been great to be in Tasmania at this time, that's for sure. But on the other side, when you are dealing with people, and I don't mean Tasmania, anywhere for it, no matter what, you're presenting, if you do your research correctly, you're presenting leaders or opposition leaders, whoever it might be, with some really powerful research that they can use to tap into the emotions of the people they're working with every day, who will ultimately support or not support them. And so to not use it is foolish. And I've really seen and watched people take this on, and they start to tell the story, and then it starts to infiltrate the people they're working with and being around. Mm-hmm. So that is one thing. The sophisticated leaders understand, cool, we have something here. That's a really easy and powerful story to tell. And I can see how I can use that in my own way. And whether that's a politician or a business partner or someone in the education realm, someone at the university or universities, that's what we ultimately want. And so you are in some ways tapping into the selfishness of whoever it is you're speaking to. You're giving them a gift, and hopefully they'll go off and use it in whatever way possible. And really, hopefully, they're using it in a positive way.
Well, look, Todd, that sounds like a pretty good note to end on at the moment. We've taken plenty of your time, but I would just say it's a pleasure to be working with you and your team at Brand Tasmania. Our sort of relationship goes back to the 2019 Place Branding Australia conference, where your team was in attendance and they were just over-enthused about the idea of the conference coming down to Tasmania. And we went ahead and scheduled for June 2020, and what happened happened, and we've had a crack at putting it on another couple times, but we're pretty excited about the idea that we'll be able to finally go ahead in March, from March 9 to 11 down in Hobart at the Grand Chancellor Hotel for Place Branding Australia, the conference, where Todd will be the keynote speaker, and we'll hear more about the Brand Tasmania story and what the past 3 years have looked like for them, and the results that the remarkable results that they've managed to achieve in that time. So, Todd, thank you so much for your time today, and we can't wait to see you when we get down to Hobart.
I'm really looking forward to it, and thanks, Stu, for mentioning the team I get to work with, because while it's me you're talking to, they make all this possible. They're just brilliant people, and they're really dedicated to this, and I hope they find it fun and challenging and special coming to work every day. We do feel really privileged to have this mission impossible before us, and we're really looking forward to sharing it at the conference.
Awesome. Can't wait to be sitting in the audience and taking it all in when the time comes. If you're interested in finding out more about the conference, please head to our website, placebrandingaustralia.com.au. You can find out more about the program and the other speakers that we have confirmed, and we'd love to see you there.
Place Branding Australia. Place Branding Australia.